The Ozarks at Large podcast is made possible by KUAF's contributing listeners. Support from individual listeners in our community helps pay for the cost of producing and distributing this podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast and other digital media produced by KUAF, you can make a contribution at supportkuaf.com.
This is 91.3 KUAF, where you can hear Terry Gross and Fresh Air twice every weekday at 11 a.m. and 6 p.m. And this is Ozarks at Large for Monday, January 8th, 2017. I'm Kyle Kellums. Later on today's show, Michael Tilley from Talk Business and Politics will take one more look at the past year. He's selected the top stories for the Fort Smith region for 2017, from a nearly year-long controversy surrounding how the city handled recycling to the first class taking classes at the Arkansas College of Osteopathic Medicine. First on this Monday, the new year will bring the opening of another medical campus, this one in Northwest Arkansas. This weekend, Children's Northwest closed its capital campaign that helped construct the region's first pediatric hospital.
We will be giving $8 million to the campaign and naming three significant areas of the hospital. It's very exciting for the family.
That's Mandy Mackey, the associate director of the Willard and Pat Walker Charitable Foundation, formally announcing the culminating contribution. The three areas she mentioned that will be named for the Walker family include the main stairwell that will be called the Pat Walker Beacon of Hope, the Willard Walker Helipad, and the Pat and Willard Walker Family Outpatient Clinics. Marcy Doderer, president and CEO of Arkansas Children's, says the Walker gift is one of many to help build the hospital.
With that, we're able to say we've had 14,000 gifts come from the people of Arkansas to help us build the physical plant, to find the people, to establish the programs that will really make a difference in the lives of children up here. So 14,000 gifts, a grand total of about $80 million have been raised over the last 2 years.
Children's Northwest will be opening in stages throughout the early part of the year. And this weekend, we were able to see some of the features of the hospital before patients and families begin arriving. Rebecca Brockman, with the Communications Department of Arkansas Children's, says the entire facility is created with keeping young patients' needs in mind. The pre-op rooms include lights overhead with purple, yellow, and green illumination.
There's a couple themes that we have at the hospital, and one is discovery and delight. And this, the beauty of this room is the family is going to be able to be with their patient right before surgery. So instead of just seeing a nurse, they're going to be able to see mom and dad before they head into surgery. There's lighting above, and so the child is distracted and not thinking about what's going to happen, and they might be in a difficult situation.
Just on the other side of that pre-op room is the actual operating room. Those five surgery rooms have the machinery we imagine would be in a modern-day operating room. There are also several screens positioned all over those rooms. In one, during the preview tour, those screens were showing high-definition images of fish.
It's to take the child's mind off what's ever happening and preparing them for surgery.
In all, Children's Northwest includes more than 233,000 square feet of hospital on more than 35 acres of donated land in Springdale. As the finishing touches are being administered, and you can still see a few post-it notes with words like clock or hand sanitizer applied to walls, Tricia Montague, the chief administrator of Arkansas Children's Northwest, says she can imagine what it will be like soon when patients are received. She says she's actually been imagining that every day for the past couple of years.
I mean, every day I have at least one conversation with a staff member that we say, we can't wait to see the kids in here. And I think we've created an environment that's all about kids and families. And, you know, we have this design theme called Discovery and Delight. And I believe it's working because as we've brought kids in here just to see the place, they have in fact discovered the things that we hoped that they would discover and have loved them. So I think it's a hospital that we were very purposeful in thinking about bringing lots of light in, not just for the healing and hopefulness that brings to patients, but also just representing Northwest Arkansas. Worked so hard to have this sort of indoor-outdoor sense from this hospital, and I think we've really captured that.
Almost every space where a patient or a patient's family might be for rest, recuperation, or check-in includes natural light and views of the surrounding landscape. Many of the patient areas actually include a view of left field of Arvest Ballpark, located just across the street from the children's campus.
I think it will be actually a happy place where people are dealing with serious things, but we're doing it with hope and joy as well.
Marcy Doderer, the CEO and president of Arkansas Children's, says there is a basic 11-county region in northern and western Arkansas where the patients at Children's Northwest will arrive from for treatment. That primary service area includes about 200,000 children.
We also hope to attract kids from across the border in Oklahoma or Missouri. Those numbers are harder for us to kind of package into a business plan, but we know there are children that we would be closer for them than traveling, say, up to Kansas City or Springfield or Tulsa or somewhere like that. So it's helpful. I think we will have a regional presence here even as we call ourselves Arkansas Children's Northwest.
Marcy Doderer says the highest level of critical care that would be necessary for a child will still be delivered in Little Rock at the beginning. She says it will be a while before Children's is able to bring that kind of tertiary care to Northwest Arkansas. And she says creating a pediatric-only hospital from literally the ground up requires a different brand of creation.
There's this phrase in pediatric healthcare that says children are not little adults, and that's absolutely true. At every milestone of a child's life, their physical needs are different, their emotional needs, psychological needs, and the physiology is all different. So you build a space never knowing on a given day whether you will be full of teenagers or tiny infants. And so everything you do has to be created in such a way that you can, in the moment, take care of the smallest child or the robust football player who just hurt his knee.
Tricia Montague, the chief administrator for Children's Northwest, says the differences for a pediatric hospital extend to every inch of the building's design and to the more abstract philosophical concepts of medical care.
You don't just take care of a child, you take care of their whole family. Whoever comes in with them, that's who your patient is. And so you want to create a space that will delight the child, but will also bring comfort to the families. And so all of those things, I think, they're very conscious, purposeful things that you think about when you're designing and staffing and supplying a children's hospital.
And with the entire family in mind, a large space on the fourth floor called the Family House includes laundry facilities, play areas, televisions, coffee, snacks, and more amenities for parents, relatives, and siblings needed to stay while a child is in surgery or recovers. Close by the Family House is an infusion center for children receiving chemotherapy or other cancer treatments. Arkansas Children's officials say Northwest Arkansas's continued steady growth is a major reason the hospital needed to be built. And Marcy Doderer, the CEO of Arkansas Children's, says the construction of the soon-to-be-opened Children's Northwest was done with future possible demands in mind.
The design of the facility was thoughtfully crafted such that expansion becomes pretty easy without disrupting ongoing business. So as we see the need for more inpatient beds, for example, it'll be relatively easy to build a new ambulatory space and turn our existing clinics into inpatient beds and that kind of thing. We'll be able to, if you look around the land, we position this building in such a way that we can add different bed towers over the next 10, 20, 50 years and never run out of space. And the generous gift from the George and Evans families of the 38 acres that we've started with will allow us to always meet the needs of this community, regardless of how big it becomes.
This weekend, the capital campaign for the construction of the hospital ended with that $8 million gift from the Willard and Pat Walker Charitable Foundation. The two-year effort raised about $80 million. Tomorrow, pediatric subspecialists and therapists will begin seeing patients in the Pat and Willard Walker family outpatient clinics, and the hospital will continue to open in stages throughout the early part of the year. This is Ozarks at Large.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. SONA, the Symphony of Northwest Arkansas, continues its 63rd season on January 27th at Walton Arts Center. Maestro Paul Haas and SONA musicians will present the season's second Masterworks concert, showcasing Mendelssohn's Fourth Symphony and Mozart's Second Horn Concerto, which will feature soloist Bruce Schultz. Tickets at 443-5600 or sonamusic.org.
And just ahead on today's Ozarks at Large, Michael Tilley with Talk Business and Politics offers one final look back at some of the news in 2017. He and his staff tabulated their votes and developed a top 10 list of news stories affecting Fort Smith and the Arkansas River Valley in the previous 12 months.
we caught them, when I say we, talk business and politics, caught them in at least two lies about why they weren't doing it and when they quit recycling. And so I think there's still some questions unanswered, but the city has contracted now with Third Rock Recycling. They say they're getting back into the process.
Michael Tilley and 10 news stories that had an impact on the last year, and many of them might on the new year ahead on today's Ozarks at Large. Can you believe it? Elvis Aaron Presley, the pride of Tupelo, Mississippi, and the king of rock and roll, is 83 years old today. If you see Elvis, wish him a happy birthday. That message comes to us from our day sponsor, Walt Menger. Educator Raven Cook will be giving a lecture titled Music and the Movement, an Exploration of the Black Experience and the Music that Moved the World, January 25th at 6:30 p.m. at the Artist Laboratory Theater in Fayetteville. Raven Cook will explore several genres of music created by African Americans and their impact on social movements in the United States and abroad. As part of the theater's mission to make the arts accessible, admission is pay what you can, and the venue is accessible to all attendees with disabilities. You can find out more at the Artist Laboratory Theater Facebook page. Buffalo National River Partners and the Boone County Library present A Night at the Movies. It Came from Boxley Valley. This will take place on the 23rd, beginning at 5:30 in Harrison. Several videos documenting early park development have been recently transferred to digital format, and Kevin Clark will provide a brief introduction to videotape made in 1992 by then Deputy Superintendent Jim Lyle and former park historian Susie Lyles, and which shows Boxley Valley as it was then, and discusses the vision for Boxley Valley at that time. Does it seem weird that 1992 is already when we're looking back toward? Anyway, for more, you can go to bnrpartners.org, or you can always search Facebook.
A new NPR investigation finds that some of the most vulnerable people in the country suffer one of the highest rates of sexual assault.
Folks with intellectual disabilities are the perfect victim.
In group homes and institutions, at school and at work.
If this were any other population, the world would be up in arms.
Intellectual Disabilities and Sexual Assault, this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
From 3 to 6 this afternoon on 91.3. It is Monday, January 8th, 2018. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me on the phone from his office in Fort Smith is Michael Tilley with Talk Business and Politics. How are you, Michael?
I'm doing well. Good weekend so far.
Good. I remembered it was January, not November, unlike when I introduced you on Friday's show. The first of the year always kind of gets me discombobulated.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I don't write checks anymore, but when I used to, it was halfway through the year before I got the year right.
Right. Well, let's talk about last year. Talk Business and Politics has a list of what you and your colleagues there at Talk Business and Politics thought were the top 10 stories regarding Fort Smith in 2017. Do you mind if we go over that?
Sure. And the only qualifier is that, you know, we don't do, you know, house fires and stabbings and that
right.
kind of thing. So our top 10 is the more in what we think are the more impactful business and political stories of the year in terms of impacting economy, jobs, government, that type of thing.
Well, let's see. I know that number 10 is not an unfamiliar subject, the Marshall's Museum.
Right. And the news there was that a couple of big things. One, they completely redesigned the facility in terms of materials and a few other aspects, and they reduced the cost by more than 50%. They confirmed and committed to the September 24, 2019 opening. Which, you know, that's, they've been pushing for this thing since 2007, and they're, you know, this has been pushed back for each year. So we will see, but from the talks we have and with people, that 2019 opening seems to be firm. The fundraising is kicking in. They're getting Kyle to the point. I think they'll have enough money to begin the construction. So, it'll likely be in the top 10 for 2018 as well.
Well, number 9 is the Fort Smith School Board. They were certainly talks of the top 10 in 2016 when we were talking about Southside Rebels. But this year was a little bit different, a little calmer for Fort Smith School District.
Yeah, it's calmer. We still had a little bit of a hangover, so to speak, from the mascot issue, but they brought in a new superintendent, almost a whole new school board look, and most importantly, this Vision 2023 plan, which Dr. Brubaker, Doug Brubaker, the new superintendent, has pushed. As skeptical as I am and often am, I've been somewhat pleasantly surprised. He's getting not only buy-in from the usual stakeholders, but the business community and other folks, and seem to have some progressive ideas in terms of workforce development and in an innovative type curriculum. So we're going to continue to watch that and maintain.
Numbers 8 and 7 on your list were somewhat related. Number 8, Phoenix investors buying that former Whirlpool plant, and number 7, the ups and downs of manufacturing.
Yeah, the Whirlpool plant, that's just been kind of an albatross. So it was very nice for Phoenix investors just to come in and buy the whole thing, and they've repurposed the building, white spaced it, or white boxed it, I think is the term they use. You know, they haven't created any jobs, but we've looked at Phoenix investors. They have a pretty good track record of buying these large buildings, whether they were previously warehouses or manufacturing places, and repurposing them. How they're not going to return, you know, those thousands of jobs, but they will, I'm confident, at some point in the next two to five years, they will have people working out there. And on the manufacturing ups and downs, you know, you had Pradco announced a 60-job expansion, Mars Petcare moving forward on a $72 million expansion. But then at the same time, earlier this in 2017, you had Train saying they were going to close their facility. That's 200 jobs. Overall, in November, the region had 17,700 manufacturing jobs. That's well below 19,200 6 years ago, and well below the peak of 31,200 in June 1999. So if there's a silver lining here, I think the bleeding has stopped in terms of jobs, but it's struggling to gain any upward momentum.
It's never going to be up back to that peak in the late 90s, we don't think, right?
No, and that's not just Fort Smith. That's
right.
Automation and other productivity gains, you know, that plant that used to need 5,000 people may just need 1,000 now.
Right.
So that's just the nature of that's like another industrial revolution, so to speak.
Sixth on your list, and I think that there will be city leaders in Fort Smith that don't like this anecdote, but over the holidays, I was at a gathering, and someone was recounting how a town in southern Missouri had been caught not recycling everything they said they were going to recycle. And about four people in this gathering said in unison, oh, just like Fort Smith.
Yeah.
And so number six is the recycling issue.
Yeah, you know, and we debated this. This began a little bit lower or higher on the list, however you want to look at it, you know, down around two or three. But yeah, I was there was two problems here. One, Kyle, we discovered that they weren't recycling like they told everybody they were. And then we caught them, when I say we, talk business and some politics, caught them in at least two lies about why they weren't doing it and when they quit recycling. And so I think there's still some questions unanswered, but the city has contracted now with Third Rock Recycling. They say they're getting back into the process. It's probably something we're going to look at and check up again in the year. It'll be interesting to see if the city audits itself at some point to see if the new contract is working. But it was a very embarrassing episode for the city of Fort Smith.
Five on the list, Fort Smith hiring a new police chief. This, too, a kind of an extension of a long, swirling conversation in the city.
Yes, and the Fort Smith Police Department has been known, unfortunately, for being very white, very little diversity. So when they hired Chief Nathaniel Clark, not only was he the city's first African-American police chief, he is one of the few black police officers to work for the city's department. In fact, some think that the out of 150 or so that are employed, there are only two or three black police officers, and we've got a rough estimate that there's only been 12 black police officers hired by the police department in the city's history. So not a good sign. And then Chief Clark immediately began to run into opposition when he wanted to bring in his type of, style of police chief. And there's just some underlying racism there. I think we've talked about it before, and this is going to continue. He's run up against the paternal order of police who, you know, they like things the way they were going. Mm. And they just don't really need a black police chief coming in and telling them how to run their department. We're going to have more of this in 2018.
12 black officers hired in 200 years?
That's, you know,
Sure.
That's a very close estimate. If it's not accurate, it's not far off.
All right. Number four on the list, something that happened over the holidays, and it was the death of Dr. Jerry Stewart, who had been a major figure in Fort Smith for some time.
Yeah, you could put all of the major accomplishments and major boards and commissions up on a wall and throw a dart at it, and I guarantee you, you're going to hit something that Dr. Stewart had not just was involved with, but had a huge impact in terms of leadership. And just this may be unfair, but I'm going to pick one of the many, and that was the Fort Chaffee Redevelopment Authority. And it just so happened at the time, I was working for the Fort Smith Chamber, and Dr. Stewart was one of our executive committee members on the board, but he played a prominent role in creating then what was called the Local Redevelopment Authority. All of that had to happen before the government the military handed over those 7,200 acres to the Fort Chaffee Redevelopment Authority. And he and a few others, I'm not giving Dr. Stewart the total credit, but I guarantee you he had some major influence on the decision, but they laid out a plan that Kyle was still being pretty much followed and is, I think, part of the reason for the success out of Chaffee. I know Ivy Owen, the director out there, likes to take some of the credit for it, but I think a lot of the groundwork was laid by folks like Dr. Stewart out there. And also, when he took over as CEO of Cooper Clinic, it was a physicians group of about 50 doctors. They were struggling. When he left 10 years later, they had at least 130 doctors, had more than 600 employees, and operated from 25 locations. So he was not only a good community leader, but he damn well knew how to run a business.
And he passed away the day after Christmas.
Yes, sir.
Speaking of Cooper Clinic, they factor in your number three story for Fort Smith for 2017, Mercy Buying Cooper.
Yep. Major deal. I mean, it wasn't a surprise. Cooper Clinic had been struggling. Mercy and Cooper had been in legal battles about stealing doctors. And so this is, hopefully this will be a good thing that can bring the best resources of both facilities and build on that.
And then number two, momentum continuing in downtown Fort Smith, the second year of the unexpected development, you know, other people moving in. This is a good sign for downtown Fort Smith.
Yeah, this is a good sign. And I've been watching downtown Fort Smith probably since the early 90s, 1992. I've seen some cycles come and go. I've never seen anything like this in terms of positive, in terms of impact and momentum. And a lot of that is, you know, some private business owners are really putting their money where their mouth is. Steve Clark with ProPAC, who helped found and fund the Unexpected Project, which really got a lot of buzz going. I mention him at risk of forgetting some other important folks, but this is momentum. You know, in some of the past cycles, I would think, well, is this going to last in the next year? Now you wonder, it's easily going to last in the next year. Is it a five-year cycle or a 10-year cycle? I think it's got that kind of momentum behind it. And barring any crazy negative economic downturn, either in the region or the state or nation, I think that momentum continues.
And the number one story, and when I first saw the headline at talkbusiness.net, this is what I thought would be a sign number one. It is indeed. It's the Arkansas Colleges for Health Education First Class and all the things that were announced over 2017 about that area.
Yeah, that was a unanimous. Of all the items on the list, this was a unanimous. I mean, everybody was like, yeah, that's our number one. And that was, as you said, the Arkansas Colleges Health Education began their first class. This has been a 4 or 5 year, if not longer, project in the making. Also announced a second college, Arkansas College of Health Sciences, that will open in 2020, $21 million project. It also, this huge development near it that will include 1,900 types of housing, retail. It's just going to be a mini city built around this college of health education. And I'm how I'm going to be surprised if we end 2018 without another type of announcement of a college on that campus. So which is to say, I'll be surprised if in 2018 this institution is not again the top story.
The top 10 stories in the Fort Smith Metro for 2017, as selected by Michael Tilley and the staff at Talk Business and Politics. Michael Tilley is a regular guest on Ozarks at Large most Fridays and Mondays. You can read about these stories and many others through 2018 at talkbusiness.net. This is Ozarks at Large.
This is KUAF station manager Rick Stockdale. Support the international, national, and local public radio programming that you listen to on 91.3 by making a gift online today at supportkuaf.com. And thanks.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. The University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences is cutting hundreds of positions in an effort to bring UAMS into compliance with the 2018 budget. According to reporting from Talk Business and Politics, 258 of the 600 cut positions are currently filled. UAMS has a main campus in Little Rock and another in Fayetteville. A news release from a UAMS spokesperson indicates UAMS has faced financial challenges for many years, but has been able to make up shortfalls with reserve funds. However, those reserves are being depleted. UAMS employees being laid off will be notified today about their status, according to the UAMS spokesperson. There is another effort to legalize casinos in Arkansas, this version tied to sending money to the state's bank account to help pay for highways. Friday, the group Driving Arkansas Forward began an effort to place the question in front of voters. The group asked the Arkansas Attorney General's office to approve the popular name and the ballot title. If approved, the process to collect signatures would begin. Backers say the proposed constitutional amendment would allocate 65% of casino revenues to highway projects, and the bill would allow three casinos to be built. One casino each would be located in Jefferson and Crittenden counties, and a third to be either in Union, Pope, White, Mississippi, or Miller County. We'll have more on the proposed amendment later this week on Ozarks at Large. Oklahoma voters will weigh in on legal medical marijuana this summer. Last week, Oklahoma Governor Mary Fallon announced an election for possibly legalizing medical marijuana in the Sooner State, and that the election would be held on June 26th. Supporters gathered more than the required 66,000 signatures to place the matter in front of voters. The number of flu deaths in Arkansas so far this season is now up to 28. 16 were reported last week alone. State epidemiologist Dr. Kirk Haslow says the flu is unpredictable and some years are better than others.
By all indications, this flu season is starting to look like a bad one. We have already reached an intensity of flu activity that's been higher than what we've seen in the last, 5 years. When we've had good data, it's not showing any sign of decreasing.
He says most flu-related deaths occur during the latter half of the season, and because so many have already occurred during this season, that's a bad sign. Flu season could typically start in October and run through April or May. It peaks between December and March, according to Dr. Haslow. A new report from the group Wallet Hub gives Arkansas a low ranking when it comes to best states to raise a family. The study rates different indicators of what authors call family friendliness, including infant mortality rate, violent crime, and average median family salaries. Arkansas overall is listed as the 8th worst state to raise a family and scores especially low in percentage of families living in poverty, infant mortality, and the separation and divorce rate. Arkansas's best numbers are in housing affordability, where the state ranks 16th. Oklahoma's overall family friendliness rate is 45th. Missouri is ranked as the 24th best state to raise a family. And an entertainer with strong Arkansas ties is being remembered as a comedian and comic actor with unique abilities to entertain. Jerry Van Dyke died this weekend at the age of 86. He was known for several movie and TV roles, including that of the somewhat naive Luther on the long-running sitcom Coach.
Oh, Luther, come here and look at this one for a minute.
Oh, yeah, I like that.
See how she's used bold strokes through here? It gives the painting a real feeling of power and life.
Hmm? I say, you sure don't want a cracker?
You make them look real good, but no thanks.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I am really enjoying this.
It's nice of you to say that, Luther.
No, I mean it.
Nobody's ever explained art to me before. So basically what you're saying is everything here has been done on purpose.
Though born in Illinois, he later moved to Arkansas and, with his wife, purchased a city block in Benton and opened a soda shop and theater that included his name.
With the Department of Arkansas Heritage, I'm Mark Chris of the Arkansas World War I Centennial Commemoration Committee. 100 years ago, on January 8, 1918, President Woodrow Wilson addressed a joint session of Congress to outline 14 points to achieve a lasting peace in Europe. Wilson called for the elimination of the causes of the war through disarmament, freedom of the seas, adoption of open diplomacy, and negotiation of colonial aims. He called for the right of nations freely to determine, without external interference, their political status and to pursue their economic, social, and cultural systems. The president also demanded that Germany and the Central Powers abandon all of the countries invaded during the war, including France, Belgium, and Russia, and called for the creation of a League of Nations that would work to resolve future conflicts without warfare. The Arkansas Gazette supported the goals, writing, "The Allies have their peace cards on the table, and the Kaiser must either follow suit or trump up something besides fighting a defensive war to talk about." To learn more, visit ww1arkansas.com.
It is Monday, January 8th, 2018. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellins. With me is Becca Martin Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
It does feel good to be back in the saddle, so to speak, doesn't it?
Agreed. I think everyone always needs a break. If you can, if life affords you one, you should take it. But I do enjoy what I do.
I like routine, and mm-hmm. I like being here writing about cool stuff and talking to you all about cool stuff. I should have started this with, "Hi, my name's Becca, and I have a problem."
Hi, Becca. What's your problem?
I like stuff. I like to collect stuff.
That can become a problem.
This whole minimalizing thing that our generation's doing, oh, heck no. Get out of my sight. There's something wrong with y'all. I want to leave a big pile of stuff that my sisters have to deal with. So coming up Saturday is this thing the Shiloh Museum does once a year.
Yes.
They call it their Cabin Fever Reliever. It's their Christmas open house. Mm-hmm. But they moved it to January several years ago. Because people need to get out. We're all in the doldrums of January.
Well, because so many things happen from the last week of November to the first day of January. So many things happen that it's nice to have something away from that.
Thus the Cabin Fever Reliever name. It's also their Collector's Day, mm-hmm. where they invite friends of the museum to come and show their collections.
And I remember last year you told me that someone was there who had a collection of Do Not Disturb signs.
Yes.
Allison, this year...
They have collections of buttons.
Sure.
Plushies.
What's these?
Stuffed animals.
Oh, okay. Is that what they're called in the trade?
I guess
plushies?
So.
Okay.
Toy horses.
Mm-hmm.
Safety razors. Dolls.
Wait, we're going to back up for a second. Safety razors?
So they tell me.
There are different kinds?
So they tell me.
Okay, all right. That's cool.
Bird figurines.
Mm-hmm.
Die-cast cars.
Oh, yeah.
Hats. Paperweights, toy trucks, Victorian knife rests. Those little china things you put your knife on by your bread plate. Who knew?
I was going to say, these are fancier people than me.
Magnets. Raggedy Ann and Andy.
Magnets like you put on your refrigerator?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hummel figurines.
Mm-hmm.
Circus wagon models.
Okay, that's cool.
Pueblo art.
Neat.
And the gentleman that I talked to who collects Asian teakwood carvings and temple rubbings and Japanese dishes and Korean metal chopsticks. His name's Bob Kabanek. He's mm-hmm. from Springdale. And here's the twist of his story. He was in the Peace Corps. Mm-hmm. He joined the Peace Corps in 1965 and was overseas off and on through his whole life, ending his career with the Department of Defense. So he collected these things in Thailand and Japan and Korea and Germany, off to the side, because he didn't collect them to be collecting, because, well, he's male. Sorry, I don't think as many men just collect.
Oh, I...
Would you...
I would disagree.
Okay.
It might be slightly different things or something, but no, I think...
Well, he collected because it made him think of the people he met and his times there. But his most treasured memento he got instead of the tribal chief's daughter.
Mm.
He was in a village of the Hmong people
mm-hmm.
in Thailand. And the village headman discovered it was his last visit and asked him if he'd like to marry his daughter.
Oh, my.
And Bob said, He turned to somebody else there who spoke English, which the Hmong chief didn't speak, and said, "What do I tell him?" And the friend said, "You'll think of something." So he thought fast, and he told the tribal chief that he didn't think his daughter would be happy in the United States, in our culture. It was so very different.
Sure.
He was honored, but he didn't think it would be a good thing for her. Well, that made the chief happy, so he gave him a gift. Mm-hmm. He gave him an opium pipe because their big crop and moneymaker at the time was opium poppies.
Okay.
So that's one of his prized possessions.
I don't blame him.
He went on to teach agriculture as overseas. Mm-hmm. And ended up in Springdale to teach electronics at Northwest Technical Institute. And now he's going to show off his collection, along with all these other people who collect weird and wonderful things. It's from 10 to 2 on Saturday at the Shiloh Museum. It's free. It'll be a ton of fun. All sorts of book clubs this week. Every library in Northwest Arkansas has a book club for all ages going on this week. On Tuesday, Books and Brews on Mission Boulevard in Fayetteville, an offering of the Fayetteville Public Library. This happens on, I think it's the second Tuesday of every month.
I think you're right, yeah.
On Wednesday, Tri-FPL is Custom Stationery Designs at 6 o'clock at the Fayetteville Public Library. And there's a sci-fi book club and adult coloring and all sorts of things. And then on Thursday, Crimes and Clues Book Club at the Fayetteville Public Library and Knitting and Crocheting at the Bella Vista Public Library. It's that time of year where you can go learn something, do something. And we have a whole list of classes and camps and workshops and stuff in yesterday's What's Up.
You don't have to stay in the house.
No.
All right. Becca Martin Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Additional support provided by Highlands Oncology Group. Highlands Oncology's cancer specialists provide comprehensive, collaborative care, allowing patients and families to stay close to home. With locations in Benton and Washington counties, Highlands Oncology is helping patients fight the battle every day. HighlandsOncologyGroup.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me is Pete Hartman, who is the operations manager at 91.3 KUAF. Pete, welcome back and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Kyle. Thanks for having me.
Do you make resolutions?
No, I don't. But our membership director and I just now, Lee Wood, mm-hmm. just came up with one that we actually are going to do. And that is, instead of walking across the street and bringing over our lovely drink in a prefab cup, we're taking our own cups.
There you go.
I mean, that's
little steps, you bet. Usually you spend a few minutes with us on Monday telling us some of the things that are happening in the area and happening on the station. I hope that is the case again this Monday.
Indeed it is. I thought first we'd talk about this week's Sunday special, what we loosely call the hour at 3 p.m. on most Sundays, where we get to offer kind of one-offs. If
limited
not,
series.
Exactly.
Right.
This Sunday, 3 p.m., a special called LBJ's War, Vietnam War. I know there's a lot of different lectures taking place next month or so on this topic. And they took on this hour from the perspective of a president who started out with so much promise and how his image really has been
tarnished
with the Vietnam War, and specifically, I guess, some of this information that's come out relatively recently that the administration knew that the unwinnable war, all of that. So that should be interesting, interesting hour, Sunday at 3 p.m. A couple of different things taking place this week. If you were to look at the community calendar, you might see a few of these. Art Ventures,
just on the square on Fayetteville.
Used to be known as Fayetteville Underground. It's Art Ventures now. They're in the same spot. They're hosting a performance by the Haiga Duo. Okay. This is internationally known Chicago-based musicians Jason Chen and Eric Hollander. Viola and accordion. And they specialize in adapting literary and poetic forms into music. Musical composition. So that might be something neat to look into. Again, that's Friday evening, starts at 6. For more, search Art Ventures on Facebook. Next Monday, that's January 15th, you can honor Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. with Tricycle Farms' fifth annual National Day of Service. They have this tagline, make it a day on instead of a day off. There's going to be activities from noon to 4 on the farm, plus the annual stone soup, and that's a community meal. You can check out more at the Tricycle Farms Facebook page. And if you tuned in this morning, you may have heard our community spotlight featuring Robert Ginsburg. He was talking about the Northwest Arkansas Jazz All-Stars. That's a traditional big band composed of high school students. And what they do is, through auditions, they take about 38 to 40 of these high school students, and they go through the whole process of jazz. They work with the Fayetteville Jazz Collective, some of the finest jazz musicians in the area, and they get to record in a studio when they're all done. It's just a really cool thing. And the reason we're talking about it is because the registration ends on the 17th.
Which is a week from Wednesday.
That's right. So if you would want to know more about that, just go to waltonartscenter.org. Community Spotlight. As I said, we heard about the Jazz All-Stars from Robert earlier today. We're going to later this week preview the Ozark Mountain Music Festival with help from Dylan Hoff and Elena Blake. They'll be performing, and that's coming up next weekend.
Osmo Moo, as the regulars call it.
I love it. The Osmo Moo, yeah. So we'll hear from them a little later. And
I just want to point out that's an all indoor music festival. It's in January, but don't worry.
Does it get cold January in Eureka?
Oh, I can.
And then staying with Community Spotlight, we won't hear from these folks this week, but I'm going to do something a little different. Stepping outside the Nancy Blair Operation Studio to take the microphone on the road, if you will, we're actually going to talk with Dan Robinson of Fayetteville Public Television and get to tour the studio. I haven't been up there in decades. And they really do offer this community some great stuff. We're going to talk about what they do. So that's I'm interested to get into that. Olivia Sordo, a jewelry maker here in Fayetteville, we're going to talk about her latest thing, a group called Free Geek.
Yeah, we had them on Ozarks at Large last month.
Well, then you know a little bit about it. I'm interested to talk to her. It sounds really interesting. In a nutshell, making computer jewelry, recycled pieces, but proceeds also go into helping nonprofits in the area. So
that's right.
Going to hear from them.
You're going to be busy this week.
You know what? It's about time. It was you get that kind of low
that holiday
part.
Rust.
We're back, and yeah.
And then LBJ's War is Sunday afternoon at 3 on 91.3.
That is correct.
Thank you, Peter.
All right.
This is Ozarks at Large. The University of Arkansas women's basketball team is now 1-2 in SEC play after losing to Alabama yesterday afternoon in Bud Walton Arena on the University of Arkansas campus. The final score, Alabama 83, Arkansas 76. The women will next be in action Thursday night in Athens, taking on Georgia. Meanwhile, the University of Arkansas men are also now 1-2 after losing to Auburn Saturday in Alabama. Arkansas remains ranked number 22 in the nation, but that should probably change with the next poll. Next up for the men, LSU in Bud Walton Arena Wednesday night, 8 o'clock tip-off. John Brown University's basketball teams won both of their games Saturday afternoon in Siloam Springs against Oklahoma Panhandle State. The women, ranked number 19 in the country, won by 33. The JBU men Saturday won a thrilling high-scoring game, 106-103. Next for both JBU basketball teams, Thursday on the road at Texas Wesleyan. And the University of Arkansas Fort Smith basketball teams both came away with victories Saturday in home games against Newman University. Both will be in action on the road at St. Edward's University Thursday night.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Comes the night, shadows fall, lots of girls I can call, lots of girls, still I'm lonely as as I can be. So don't envy.
It's been said the actor George Hamilton is better known for his style and perpetually tanned skin than his skills as a thespian, but even less known is his singing career. And still lesser known is Hamilton's time living in northeast Arkansas in Mississippi County's Blytheville. Hamilton has starred in such films as Where the Boys Are, The Victors, Love at First Bite, Zorro the Gay Blade, and The Godfather Part 3. Born in 1939, locals in Blytheville got to know Hamilton as Georgie. His grandfather was a physician in Blytheville, C.C. Stevens, known as Docky to his grandchildren. Hamilton describes Blytheville as the most un-Hollywood of places. Georgie found work picking cotton and as a pin spotter at the bowling alley, and spent his wages at the Rothrock drugstore soda fountain or at one of the three movie theaters in town.
Anymore, she got away from my arms. She got away from my lips. She got away from my life.
After relocating to Southern California, following the death of his grandparents in Arkansas, George Hamilton landed a film contract with MGM Studios. Unsurprisingly then, Hamilton's brief musical career also found a home on the MGM record label. Hamilton does have some musical background. He was the son of a bandleader, George Spike Hamilton, whose band once included Spike Jones, among others. The elder Hamilton left the music field when the big band era dried up in the early 1950s. Even Grandpa Docky, back in Blytheville, played piano and a little banjo.
I put you up there, so far above me, an angel star, just meant to love me.
The songs from this episode of Arkansas Songs were recorded by Hamilton for the MGM record label in 1963. Hamilton's version of Little Betty Falling Star, heard here, was first recorded by Gene Pitney and co-written by Burt Bacharach. It's the flip side to Don't Envy Me, which opened the program, and written by the esteemed songwriting team of Burt Bacharach and Hal David. Bacharach also produced and arranged these sessions with Hamilton. In 1964, Hamilton, who was not to be confused with the country music singer George Hamilton IV, starred as country singer Hank Williams in the film biography of Williams called Your Cheatin' Heart. MGM producers used the voice of Hank Williams Jr. in the movie over Hamilton's. Although it wasn't successful, in the end, Hamilton said of the film, he got some wonderful country outfits, learned to play the guitar, and got some of the best reviews of his career. As a result, Hamilton made some appearances on the Ed Sullivan Show, singing such songs as And I Love Her, originally by the Beatles, and Act Naturally by Buck Owens. He had an ill-fated turn fronting a Las Vegas show, singing Wichita Lineman, Proud Mary, and Light My Fire. He also hosted an episode of the pop music TV show Hullabaloo.
Little Betty Falling Star. I put you up there, so far above me.
In addition to his movies, George Hamilton appeared in an episode of Columbo, one of TV's big hits of the 1970s, and joined the cast of Dynasty in the mid-1980s. In 1990, he played the Corleone family lawyer in Francis Ford Coppola's film, The Godfather Part 3. Hamilton competed in the second season of TV's Dancing with the Stars in 2006. His turn as Count Dracula, facing modern problems in the comedy Love at First Bite in 1979, and as the title character in the 1981 comedy Zorro the Gay Blade, may remain his biggest film roles. Hamilton's autobiography, titled Don't Mind If I Do, was published in 2008. His mother, Anne, a.k.a. Teenie, died in 1995 and is buried in Blytheville. My One and Only, a film based on Hamilton's travels and life with his mother, was released in 2009, starring Renee Zellweger and Kevin Bacon. 50 years into his acting career, George Hamilton remains still more known for being debonair rather than his acting, and not at all for his singing. Still, on August 12, 2009, Hamilton was given a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. It was the actor's 70th birthday. Here in its entirety is Arkansas-er George, Georgie Hamilton of Blytheville in Mississippi County from 1963 singing Little Betty Falling Star, written by and produced by Burt Bacharach.
I put you up there, so far above me, an angel star, just meant to love me. Something happened.
under your spell, till down from the sky you fell. Little Betty Falling Star.
Sha-da, sha-da-da.
No star was ever so bright, and we would meet every night. Now my empty arms long for you. I just can't believe we're through. Little Betty Falling Star.
Sha-da, sha-da-da-da. Sha-da, sha-da-da-da.
I put you up there, so far above me, an angel star, just meant to love me, but you made me cry. Won't you please tell me why I turned out to be so wrong? Where is my star? Why has it gone? There's no quarrel we cannot patch, so I'm waiting here to catch little Betty Falling Star.
Sha-da-da-da-da. Little Betty Falling Star. Sha-da-da-da-da. Little Betty Falling Star.
Little Betty Falling Star, sung by the actor George Hamilton of Blytheville in Mississippi County in Northeast Arkansas. It's another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Arkansongs is a production of Experiment Station Studios. Producer is Keith Merks. Arkansongs, since 1998.
And tomorrow on Ozarks at Large, a report on the continued struggles for trying to make traffic in Bella Vista better.
Barring winning a lottery and putting in a whole brand new street down, you know, where 71 is, it's going to be something that we're just going to have to live with.
Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek has that report. Plus, we'll meet a couple of Fayetteville High School students who are participating in a project called Putting a Face on Islam. The opening reception for the art they've created is Thursday night. That conversation and much more tomorrow on Ozarks at Large at noon and 7 p.m. on 91.3 KUAF. This is a service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas, 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Siloam Springs. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for spending part of your Monday with us. Don't forget, you can hear a brand new daily edition of Ozarks at Large every day at noon and 7. Then, if you miss anything or you heard an interview or story you'd like to share with someone or just listen to again, you can always find us online at ozarksatlarge.com as well as KUAF.com. And we're available to go with you whenever. So if our schedule and your schedule doesn't line up, we do have a podcast that puts most of our program right at your fingertips. You can subscribe for free through services like iTunes and Stitcher. We're also available at the NPR One app, which is also available for free through places like the iTunes Store. And you can also find most recent editions of Ozarks at Large through the absolutely free KUAF app. If you'd like to know more about any of the services we offer, you can go again to ozarksatlarge.com or to kuaf.com. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great rest of your Monday.